You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Robert Lee.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Justin Thomas wins a first WGC title at the Bridgestone Invitational.
Yeah, it feels nice. I've been knocking on the door this year between Mexico and the match play. You know, I felt like I was very close and it was kind of one of the few things left that I kind of felt I needed to knock off. Would have been a nice add to the resume for sure. And, you know, to win on a golf course like this, a championship golf course, and always against a very tough field, it just felt great. I really, really played well all week.
We'll hear more from the new world number two later in the show as we review the European Tour action from Firestone as well as Fiji, where Gangaji Bullar won his maiden European Tour title. And then we'll preview the year's final major, the USPGA Championship. That's at Bellerive in St. Louis, and there's also action at Gleneagles this week with the European Golf Team Championships. You're with Dan Roebuck and Robert Lee on the Race to Dubai show. Rob, how are you?
Good, thanks, Dan. Yeah, very, very good.
Excellent. Let's start with the World Golf Championship event, the Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone Country Club, where Justin Thomas cruised to a maiden WGC title with a commanding four-shot victory in Ohio. Firestone was hosting the tournament for the final time, and the course made life difficult for the world's best on day four, but Thomas kept out of trouble by and large, carding two birdies and a single bogey to get to 15 under par and secure an easy win. They never really got to him, Rob, did they?
Not really, no. I mean, the course was treacherous in many ways because it was so fiery. And there was a chance that he could slip and come back to the pack. But really, he was very much in control of what he was doing. And let's face it, 12 months ago, if you believe in bar rhythms and time of the year and everything else, he won the PGA. It's pretty much a year till this win on the eve of his defence, so it's all going well for Justin Thomas.
How much did the course change between Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday, Sunday?
Well, the scoring on... I've never seen scoring like it on Thursday. Every man and his dog was in the mid-60s. It was unbelievable. I mean, it's a tough course. Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone Country Club, generally speaking, doesn't give up a load of low scores. But it was phenomenal on Thursday. But as it started to dry up through the week, gradually there was less and less scores in the mid-60s, then in the 60s themselves. And when we got to Saturday and Sunday, it was a really tricky test.
Let's bring in Bob Bubka, American golf commentator, for his thoughts on Justin Thomas's success. The course did change, Bob, over the 4 days, but Justin played very good golf on the Sunday, and they were never able to lay a glove on him, were they, the field?
First off, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Robert. It was a different golf course on the weekend, certainly. Thursday, they had a lot of rain earlier in the week. The course was soft. There was no wind. You give the best players in the world a soft golf course without the wind factor, and they're going to be able to handle it mightily, and they certainly did that. But Justin Thomas suddenly has put himself in a league of his own. I mean, the one stat that jumps out at me, guys, he is now 5-for-5 with just a 36-hole lead. I mean, that's how dominant Justin Thomas is at the moment.
Strange, isn't it, to watch Justin Thomas in such dominant form, because he won two times earlier on in the season, Bob, but to me, he'd gone through a little bit of a doldrums over the course of the spring and the early part of the summer. Did you see this win coming from Justin?
No, I really didn't, but I knew he was thinking about the PGA Championship. He certainly got a lot of inspiration from Brooks Koepka, who went on to win back-to-back U.S. Opens. Justin Thomas certainly would like to accomplish that at the PGA. Only Tiger Woods has won back-to-back PGA titles. He actually did it two times, 99 and 2000, and then 06 and 07. So Justin Thomas, anytime he can get mentioned with the name Tiger Woods in the sentence, he knows he's in very elite company, and he's playing that well right now.
We'll talk about Tiger Woods shortly. As regards the final day, we expected the challenges to come from the likes of Rory McIlroy and Jason Day, Rob, because there were some big-name players on that leaderboard. But for whatever reason, they couldn't get close to Jason Day, Justin Thomas. They needed to start strongly. Unfortunately, it didn't happen for either. And the players that did play well came from off the pace, but they were too far back.
Yeah, funnily enough, Rory McIlroy made the early birdie to squeeze it a little bit, but then didn't sustain it, dropped shots, and pretty much quite quickly fell out of the picture. It wasn't going to be Rory. You knew that halfway through the final round. And you just couldn't see anybody getting to Justin Thomas. Dustin Johnson, the world number one, fantastic weekend, 10 under par weekend for him, and maybe he's the one to watch next week. But I think he was the low man in the final 36 in the more difficult conditions. That might be a pointer to next week.
Bob, has he changed his putter, Dustin Johnson, recently?
Yeah, he did. He didn't putt well last week, was very disappointed with it, decided to switch putters, and boy, it certainly worked for him. I mean, he couldn't miss on Sunday. And, you know, the quality of Dustin Johnson striking the golf ball, you couple that with a hot putter, I mean, he's awfully difficult to beat.
Bogeyed the last, but still finishing the tie for third for with Torbjørn Olesen. Kyle Stanley eventually finishing second, four shots adrift. Seems to do everything right, Rob, bar on the greens where he misses one or two putts, doesn't he?
Well, the thing with Kyle is, and it's always been this, he's terrific ball striking. From tee to green, he's fantastic. He's always featuring very high up in fairways, hitting a good way down there. So he's not a short powder puffer and he hits the fairways. He hits it a good way. But the putter is the weakest link in the Kyle Stanley game. If he was in the top 30 putters on the PGA Tour, he'd have so many more wins.
Well, as we mentioned, Thomas began the day three strokes clear of his nearest challenger. That was Rory McIlroy. Started with a good par save at the first before opening his opening birdie of the day from 15 feet at the long second to get to 15 under. He passed up a golden opportunity to pick up another stroke at the third and did well to drop just the one shot at the sixth after getting in trouble off the tee. Then six straight pars were followed by holding a 10-foot birdie putt on the 13th to once again open up a four-shot lead. They got a little bit closer. Jason Day, I thought, Bob, played well off the back of the turn. Three straight birdies, 10, 11 and 12. But then the wheels came off with Jason, and just when he was about to get that final push. What's gone wrong with Jason Day over the course of the summer for you, Bob?
Well, he's scratching his head. If we had Jason Day on with us, he'd give the same answer I'm about to give, and that is Jason Day can't figure out exactly what's wrong. Portions of his round, he looks unbeatable, but then a little bad wedge shot, a missed putt here and there. But he's scratching. You know, he's too talented not to produce, and I certainly think he'll be a factor next week.
Well, he's certainly a player that's in decent form, just not winning form, and he's a former USPGA champion as well. Let's turn it round to the defending champ, who is Justin Thomas. We can reflect on his victory at Firestone Country Club with the man himself.
Yeah, I've been knocking at the door all year. You know, I came very close in Mexico and then again in match play. So I'd like to have some better finishes in the majors, but, you know, this is as close as it gets in terms of that. So I'm very pleased with how well I've played these events in such great fields. And to kind of cap it off, you know, this year's WGC run with a win here in Akron going into the PGA feels nice.
Can you just reflect on having your family here this week and how much that means to you?
Yeah, you know, my grandparents don't get to come to as many tournaments as they used to. And, you know, this is a place they, being from Columbus, they can drive to. And, you know, I probably only get one or two events a year that I have the opportunity to win with them there. And I've never won on the PGA Tour. My first professional win in Columbus had them there. But, you know, that was 5 years ago now. So it's pretty cool to get it done with them here.
Your performance today, how do you feel you played, especially when players started making a charge and the way you reacted to that?
I played great. I played smart, played conservative, but conservatively aggressive. You know, we had when we had scoring clubs in our hands, we tried to get it within 10, 15 feet, and I felt we did so. Didn't really make anything today, but I didn't need to. You know, I just needed to continue to make pars, try to sprinkle in a couple birdies, and I thought we did a great job out there today.
That was Justin Thomas talking about his win at Firestone. The European Tour tweeted, 9 wins, a major and a WGC before their 26th birthday. Justin Thomas joins two other players, Rob, Bob, one apiece.
Tiger and Rory.
Oh, thanks for that. Yeah. Spoil it for everyone.
No, but listen.
You know, spoil it for everyone.
I have observation. This is gold dust. Listen, just
come on.
Trim it just for 2 minutes. Because Bob's going to love this. So life is, you know, your progeny, your offspring. You have a family, you have kids, and you hope that maybe they can do something great. And then they don't do something great. And you think, well, maybe your grandkids can do something great. There we have Justin Thomas. Granddad and grandmum there to watch him to win again. Unbelievable.
And he was a bit choked up, I think, Bob, wasn't he, towards the end of that when he noticed that they were watching?
Well, his grandfather's a club professional. His dad is a club professional, the only teacher that Justin Thomas ever had. Justin Thomas is as good for golf as good gets. I mean, not only on the golf course, off the golf course, and he has such a powerful weapon in the man that is on his bag by the name of Jimmy Johnson, former player down on the South African tour, very level-headed, very calculating, and very soothing to Justin Thomas. Anytime Justin gets a little ruffled, Jimmy Johnson will pull the bag away, take a little extra time. He knows how to push Justin Thomas's buttons. And boy, at this level, having an experienced professional caddy, maybe the best caddy out there right now, is certainly a big weapon for Mr. Thomas.
Well, Justin Thomas, of course, won. Kyle Stanley was second. We've talked about the runner-up. Tied third were Torbjörn Olesen and world number one Dustin Johnson after they closed with matching 64s. And here's what Thunderbear Olesen had to say afterwards.
Very good today. Struggled a bit on the first day, but slowly it's been better and better every day. And today I just hit a lot more fairways, a lot more greens. Made it easier for myself, and the putts started rolling in on that back nine, which was really nice.
You've had a couple of low ones on Sunday this season. What is it about the final day that brings out your best golf?
I think it's probably the mentality. I was really concentrated and just focusing on every shot, not looking forward at all, and just trying to make birdies out there today. And I did it pretty well.
Olesen tweeted afterwards, nice way to sign off from Firestone by equaling my lowest ever round in a WGC. Always enjoyed the WGC Bridgestone and will miss playing this iconic course. Next stop, Belrive for the PGA Championship. Is he playing his way onto the Ryder Cup team, Rob?
He's going to be in the conversation, but in a deep voice contest, who wins, Freddie Jacobsen or Torbjörn Olesen?
It's tight.
Hey?
It's close between the pair.
And you could slide Bubka in.
Surely Bob wins, Bob.
Well, that's a nice compliment. And as long as we want to talk about voices, not golf games, because I'm not in that conversation.
What do you know about Torbjörn Olesen, Bob?
Nothing.
Ah, I see. So, Rob, fill us in. What type of player is he? Is he going to be an asset to the European Ryder Cup team?
You know, I think Ryder Cup match play and the way Torbjörn plays absolutely go together, hand and glove. I think he'd be an asset if he makes it into the team or he gets a pick, if he gets close enough to force a pick. Hard to pick a rookie. It's very difficult to be a rookie and get picked. It does happen, but it's not the accepted norm. But I think Torbjörn, the way he plays, is explosive. He makes a lot of birdies. I think I'd love to see him in the Ryder Cup side.
So we've heard from one of those tied third. Here's Dustin Johnson's thoughts on his week in Ohio.
It was okay. Definitely better the last two rounds. I felt like even the first two rounds I played okay, but I struggled on the greens a little bit. Switched putters. I put a Spider Mini in and started rolling a little better because I felt like I was working really hard on the putt and it just wasn't getting any better. So I'd switch putters and worked a little bit. Who knows?
Dustin Johnson's thoughts on his performance at Firestone. Is he becoming something of a flat track bully, Rob? He seems to be, you know, winning sort of minor events, regular PGA Tour events. What about his major record? Has he got to be doing better in the majors, do you think? US Open wise, he had a great opportunity. He just fell away. We didn't really see anything of him, obviously, at the Open Championship.
Majors are hard to win, Dan. I mean, they're really difficult to win. You can be there or thereabouts and just not get it over the line, despite you being a really good player. But make no mistake, there are more majors coming Dustin Johnson's way. If you're worried because you're a Dustin Johnson fan that he hasn't probably racked up as many as you thought he might have done, they're coming. That's for sure.
Are they coming, Bob? Are you fearful of Dustin Johnson at the moment?
Absolutely. I agree with Rob Lee. It is so difficult. They only play 4 years, our listeners know. And sometimes you can play as well as you could play, and somebody just plays exceptionally better, and you don't get the victory. But Dustin Johnson, his complete body of work now, the length that he has off the tee, the skillful way he manipulates his wedges to get him close to the hole, and now, over the last couple of days, a putter that really works. When Dustin Johnson is putting, he's awfully difficult to beat.
We are going to preview the USPGA Championship shortly, Bob, but how difficult is it going to be for Dustin Johnson to tee it up again? Because it's unusual for golfers to play well, in his case, Open, then the Canadian, which obviously won, then the WGC, and then fourth week on the spin at Belrive. It's something we don't see, Bob, is it? That often with the top golfers, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point there, Dan. But Dustin Johnson is basically what we refer to over here, a gym rat. I mean, a couple of hours in the morning, couple of hours at night. I mean, physically, he's as fit as anybody that's playing. I do not think exhaustion is going to be a factor. Predicted maybe to be a little bit warm in St. Louis this week. However, don't worry about Dustin Johnson. He's going to be in and around that lead come the weekend.
Tied third, of course, last time out then. Let's get the full top 10. Rob.
So, top 10 at the final WGC Bridgestone Invitational from Firestone Country Club. We know that Justin Thomas won. He finished first. Carl Stanley was second. Tied for third with Dustin Johnson and Torbjørn Erlesen. Brooks Koepka, the US Open champion, was fifth on his own. Then Patrick Cantlay, Anibal Lahiri, Rory McIlroy and Aaron Wise, a new rising star on the PGA Tour, were sixth. And tied for 10th, Jason Day, Tony Finau, Siwoo Kim and Ian Poulter.
Quick words on a couple of the UK stars. Rory McIlroy, first of all. Rob, your thoughts on his week?
A nearly week for him. All going well, really, apart from the last round. 73 in the last round for Rory wasn't what he was looking forward to and wasn't really what we were expecting. We were waiting for a hot putting day, and perhaps he could have won. And he could have won had he played well. He could have won.
Bob, he seemed to putt better over the course of the week.
He did seem to putt better, but ironically enough, what hurt Rory McIlroy in the fourth and final round, and it's almost difficult to say, but he was driving the ball too far. I mean, a couple of drives over 400 yards, leaving himself 65, 70 yards into these greens. He couldn't control the spin, and he's been having trouble with his wedges. He was at very uncomfortable distances. The fact that they were too short, of a wedge shot, it was really funny to watch. But boy, oh boy, when he's on song now with that driver, he's unbelievable. I mean, 420-yard drive, he's just incredible with that big stick in his bag. And we're going to have to wait and see if he can work on those wedges a little.
Well, you're saying the right thing, Bob. I mean, I still believe that Rory McIlroy is the best player in the world. I still think he is. I know his world ranking doesn't reflect that right now. The only thing that separates, and they're very similar the way they play golf, Dustin Johnson, world number one, and Rory McIlroy, the only thing that separates them is what Bob just said, wedge play. Dustin works so, so hard to get his wedge play that was reliable from all sorts of distances. He could dial it in there. And Rory's just not doing that. That happened in Tiger's early part of his career when he was hitting flyers with wedges, pinging it over the greens. All of a sudden, he worked so, so hard with Butch Harmon to get that right, and he became a great wedge player. Rory needs to become a great wedge player. Everything else is just waiting for him.
A final couple of points of order. One for you, Rob. Ian Poulter's performance, certainly Thursday through Saturday. I think he was couple clear at one stage, wasn't he, on Saturday, but then fell away on the Sunday. But all in all, a decent week.
Well, he started with a 62 and he has a top 10. It's a WGC, top field. He goes to Bellerive. We'll see how he gets on around there. And he is very conscious of the denouement, the cutoff point for that Ryder Cup inclusion is right upon us. And in fact, next week for the American team at Bellerive, that is the cutoff week.
Not for all of them, though.
For the automatics.
Yeah, for the automatics. And one final point, Bob. The WGC leaves Firestone. Are the players going to miss playing there, and where do we go next?
Well, we go down to Memphis, and they certainly are going to miss Firestone. It's an iconic golf course. I mean, Tiger won there 8 times, and a couple of things that Tiger accomplished while at Firestone that probably you'll never, ever see again is the ninth hole. He airmailed the green once, landed on a road behind the ninth green, bounced over the clubhouse. They found his ball. He played his next shot back over the clubhouse again onto the green. And then in the playoff, I remember it was really just about pitch black with darkness. They were trying to get the cars aiming their headlights and whatnot. In my post-round interview with Tiger, I cracked him up a little bit. I said, boy, you play Firestone so well, Tiger, you could play it in the dark. And he did. I mean, to win 8 times anywhere, I mean, to win 8 times in your career is one hell of a career. To win 8 times at one venue is just remarkable.
Now we know, Bob, a pinch of salt sometimes when you're telling your tales of yore, but when Tiger got the flyer with the 9-iron and it cleared the clubhouse, the reported story is a pastry chef down the road was found with the golf ball in his pocket. They never recovered the golf ball. And he got a free drop the golf course side of the clubhouse.
Well, but hey, you can't fault the pastry chef. He wanted a souvenir.
That's the story, apparently. Ball was never found, and yet it wasn't out of bounds or lost.
Social media. Tiger Woods says, thanks, Akron, Firestone, and Bridgestone for all the memories we've shared. It's been an honour. I'm going to miss birdieing that 18th hole. Quick word on Tiger. Rob, from you, decent Thursday, Friday, fell away after that.
Yeah, I think with, you know, the fact that he got into the lead in the final round of the Open Championship, everybody sort of thought, well, now he's going to an eight-time venue for him, that it might all come together at the Bridgestone. But it didn't. And the Tiger's search for win number one on the comeback trail continues. Maybe Belle Reve.
Is he closer or further away, Bob, at the moment, would you say? Or just the same as he has been over the last few tournaments that he's teed up in?
Well, I think he was the closest that he's been going into that fourth and final round at the Open Championship. After that round, I think he's further away from that victory. He got a taste of it. He knows what a rare opportunity he was being presented, and he couldn't capitalize. When Tiger has the lead on the back nine on Sunday at a major, he fully anticipates that he's going to close the deal, and he did not do so. His play on Saturday this week was rather lethargic. He seemed a little out of sorts. You know, we have to remember, 42 years old, about 150 operations on various parts of his body. It's not an easy road for Tiger, mainly because the depth of talent with these younger guys, Justin Thomas as a prime example. I mean, good golly. I mean, Justin Thomas is playing so well. It's going to be hard for Tiger. Can he win again? We'll have to wait and see. Will he win another major? I'm starting to drift into the camp that he will not.
And finally, from Tyrrell Hatton on his Twitter account, he says, was good playing with Phil today. I was praying for him to roll that birdie putt in on 18. As he said in the fairway, the worm would make an appearance if he makes birdie. Imagine the scenes. Obviously referring to Phil Mickelson's dance ad.
Yes, Rob, I saw that.
Rob, the floor is yours.
I saw Phil pushing a few shapes
out
there. I saw Phil pushing a few shapes out there. I think it's all part of the Phil recovery package from the debacle at the US Open. Yeah.
So we'll remember him for the ad rather than what happened at the US Open.
I don't think anyone's ever going to forget what happened at the US Open. But I found the ad amusing.
Yeah, stylistically, Bob, how good was Phil Mickelson on the dance floor?
Well, he leaves a little bit to be desired. I've had the honor and pleasure of hearing Robert Lee at the piano, and I think maybe piano music by Robert Lee would improve the dance steps of Phil Mickelson.
Do you tinkle on the ivories, Rob?
No, I think he's referring to me sort of taking over the pianist playlist and getting accompanied while I was singing. I think that's what he's referring to.
Are you a karaoke guy?
I was.
What would you sing?
Well, I was in Frank mode at the time.
Yeah. You're always in Frank mode.
I know, yeah. I've got you under my skin, but I'm looking at you and I don't mean you.
Oh, I know, but give us a line.
Give the listeners a line. So listen.
Are you walking the walk or talking the talk?
We're in Augusta.
Yeah.
With Bob Bubka.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lady, she probably is 103, playing a kind of honky-tonk piano.
Oh, yeah.
And so Bob knows that sometimes I punch a tune out. He says, can you do any Frank Sinatra? She went, oh, yeah. You know, with the false teeth bouncing up and down. So swing music shouldn't be played in a honky-tonk style.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, it was hilarious.
Yeah. Bob, is this true? Was Rob on good form?
Excellent. But, you know, you have to plug in, and this is the key factor. This piano player probably was there since the Civil War. And I approached her very nicely, and I said, we have Robert Lee.
The general.
Yeah.
In the audience, and he would love to sing a song. Well, she broke into this big smile, which did expose those teeth. But anyhow, she went on to play. Robert Lee got up and sang, and the place came alive. I mean, absolutely alive. And it was highlighted by, I was so inspired by the singing of Robert Lee and the playing of Rose, the piano player, that there was a lovely couple out on the dance floor. I walked over, tapped the guy on the shoulder, asked if I could cut in. He looked a little startled. The lady looked a little startled. And then the lady almost fainted when I went off dancing with the guy.
It's all true. I promise you, it's all true. It all happened, of all places, in Augusta, Georgia.
More from Bob, would you believe it, when we are back with the preview for the USPGA Championship in a few minutes' time. Now, last week's predictions, obviously, it was Robert Lee, who was in this chair, against John Hawksworth. Two picks, usually one from outside of the top 50 from the 2017 R2D standings, but because it was a WGC event, we didn't do that. Rob, you went for Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods. You took no chances whatsoever. I hope you're not going to do something similar when we get to our predictions
well,
later.
Well, now you say that on this show. You say that on this show. I mean, everybody would go for Tiger Woods.
31st, 0 points. Rory McIlroy,
I understand
tied
that, but
six,
he's
5
not,
points.
Well, a lot of people, a lot of naysayers
See,
in
look,
my ears.
Look what John Hawksworth went, if you can remember last week. He went for Brendan Steele.
Neil Poit
and Tommy Fleetwood, 5 points. Where did he pull Brendan Steele out? Do you remember Sapphire and Steele?
Sapphire and Steele, gosh, that was...
That's taking you back, isn't it?
Pierce Brosnan.
And no, it was Joanna Lumley was one of them in the Pierce Brosnan character.
Funny you remember that.
And David somebody, the Invisible Man. I think it was the Invisible
Dave
Man.
Dave McCallum?
I think it was Dave McCallum.
Dave McCallum was the Invisible Man, but it...
Yeah,
no,
I think it was
he
him. Sapphire and Steele. Was it? Yes. Yeah, our producer saying yes. Danny's saying
Are
yes.
Are you saying Dave McCallum through the glass there?
Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, Sapphire and Steel. It was a good show.
And what was the character in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. that he played? What was his character's name?
I don't know, is he sort of Kim Likens or something?
Well,
No, he's like a Russian
bad.
Name.
Yes,
Russian
name. Yes.
Something.
Ilya Kuryakin.
That's him, yeah. Hey?
And Napoleon Solo.
That's right.
Hey?
Robert Vaughn.
Robert Vaughn. Also of the Magnificent Seven.
Yes, exactly.
Anyways,
terrific.
We're doing the film show afterwards, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. We sort of
it's a new
bled
film
one
show.
Into another no, there, but never mind.
Yeah, it's good. Overall, what's happened here since I was last in? The presenter is in 110, co-presenter on 90.
Yeah, but I've been away.
I've been away?
Yeah, there's been shenanigans going on.
I'll tell you what.
Shenanigans.
Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, Ingmar Bergman, speaking about films, still leads the overall global standings, while Michael Hale got the most points last week. In the Race 2 Dubai show mini league, listener Lewis Hay was the highest scorer from the WGC Bridgestone Invitational, while Steve Hulston still tops the table. Check out the Fantasy 3 to watch for the USPGA Championship this week on europeantour.com.
So you had Hale, Hay and Hulston?
Yes, you did. Oh, very good, yeah.
All the H's.
I have to speak to my lawyer.
You know, some people
that.
Say H. They say H.
No, it's H.
It's H.
It is H.
Yeah. That's free.
Let's move on to the action in Fiji, and Gangajit Bular held off a charging Anthony Quayle to win a first European Tour title.
You see where we're going?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
A first European Tour title at the Fiji International presented by Fiji Airways. The Indian entered the final day at the Natadola Bay Golf Club with a one-shot lead, but found himself trailing late on as the Australian Quayle came home in 29 and set the target at 13 under. A brilliant chipping eagle on the 17th moved Bular back into the lead, and he held his nerve to par the last and signed for a 66 that gave him a one-shot victory over Quayle, who finished with a brilliant 63. Four-time major championship winner Ernie Els signed for a closing 65 to finish at 12 under alongside New Zealander Ben Campbell, who led halfway. Congratulations to Gangajit Bular. I've seen his name on leaderboards around the world over the years, and he gets his maiden European Tour success.
Yeah, and that is the prize for going to, yes, it's a tournament that didn't have massive prize money, but you get, as a winner, your status back. And that's colossal.
What do you get? You get...
All next year, yeah.
Yeah.
A full, your winner's category for all next year. So for Gagangi, it's a real boon. So he'll be thrilled that he's won that. And it doesn't matter where you play, what the field is, a win is a win is a win. There is nothing like the rarefied atmosphere. Sniffing that when you're winning just leads to better things.
Bular said that he'd been playing really well. It was just a matter of time. I'm glad it happened on this stage and really happy to be back on the European Tour. I played two full seasons back in 2013 and 2014 on the European Tour. And then I had to come back to the Asian Tour because of my injury. So I think this victory is really emotional for me in terms of playing opportunity and getting back on the European soil. Stats regarding his win, his maiden European Tour victory, as we mentioned, in his 106th appearance, he moves to 135th on the Race to Dubai rankings presented by Rolex, up from 214th, and he moves to 114 on the official world golf ranking from 163. He is the sixth different Indian player to win a European Tour event, and it's the third Indian win of the season after Shubhankar Sharma's two victories earlier on this campaign. Bilal holds the most wins by an Indian golfer on the Asian Tour with 9. And this event, incidentally, was tri-sanctioned by the Australian Tour, the European Tour and the Asian Tour. Let's move on to the predictions from last week. Just one apiece from yourself and from John Hawksworth. Rob, you went for Justin Walters. I think was top 15 after day one, but tied 67th in the end.
Yeah, slid away in the end, but he did make the cut.
Unlike
John Hawksworth's
pick. Unlike Johnny
pick.
Boys, yeah. And Scott Hend was the short price favourite. I think he might have even been single-digit odds favourite. Scott Hend missed the cut, -5. So, the latest score, presenter 110.
See, I've done you a favour now.
Co-presenter 85. Yeah. Let's get the top 10 from Fiji. Rob.
Yes, Gaganjeet Bhullar, the winner. The Indian recording a victory on the European Tour with a score of 14 under par. Very well played. Anthony Quayle finished second. Ben Campbell from New Zealand tied Ernie Els from South Africa in third spot. Jared Feltham was on his own in fifth. The Australian with Andrew Doak tied for sixth alongside Jake McLeod, Poom Saxonson, Andrew Martin and Matthew Miller. And a word, because I saw Jared Feltham, for Jared Lyle, who's really struggling badly in Australia with leukemia. Young family, two young kids.
He's beaten it, three times?
I think this is...
It's awful.
So...
There's some great response from a lot of the tour golfers around the world, hasn't there?
Yeah, pray for Jared, that's all I can say.
Let's move on to the Race to Dubai standings. Top 10 look like this. Francesco Molinari leads with just over 4.3 million points. Patrick Reed in second, Tommy Fleetwood third, Rory McIlroy in fourth, Alex Noren in fifth, Torbjörn Olesen in sixth, Russell Knox is seventh, John Rahm in eighth, Tyrrell Hatton ninth, and Kiradek Appibhanrat is 10th. That's the Race to Dubai standings. Let's move on to the top 10 in the world.
Top 10 in the world. Dustin Johnson is the world number one. Into number two is Justin Thomas. Justin Rose is third. Brooks Koepka fourth. Rory McIlroy fifth. Francesco Molinari, the Open champion, sixth. John Rahm in seventh. Jordan Spieth eighth. Ricky Fowler ninth. And Jason Day rounds out the top 10 with Tommy Fleetwood just outside in 11th spot.
Ryder Cup next.
Yes, the Ryder Cup points from the Race to Dubai. Francesco Molinari, Justin Rose, Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood take up the first four spots. And then from the world rankings, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Alex Noren and Paul Casey. So that is an automatic eight of Molinari, Rose, Hatton, Fleetwood, McIlroy, Rahm, Noren, Casey. Time is running out if you're going to make a move to get into the automatic spots.
Torbjörn Olesen, how close is he?
Torbjörn Olesen is 9 in the world ranking spot, so he's one spot behind Paul Casey. So the thing is, for Ian Poulter, Erlison and Matthew Fitzpatrick, they got to get past Paul Casey. He's the guy at shootout.
Would Olesen be a pick for you?
There's a lot of players outside that eight.
Every single time I ask you this, you never give an answer. I was watching television on the golf, as I do, the other week, and you were asking your guest exactly the same question.
Yeah, because I'm telling you that Stenson is not in the automatic eight.
Would you put him in?
Poulter is not in the automatic eight. Sergio Garcia is not in the automatic eight.
Would you put him in?
Which one?
Any of them.
Yeah, I would.
Which one?
I would certainly put... I would put Garcia in, and I would put Poulter
finally
in.
Finally an answer. Let me write that down. Lee likes
Poulter's
Garcia.
Poulter's a no-brainer. Okay. Poulter's a no-brainer. He's close enough, and his Ryder Cup record is fantastic. It's not going to be like the last time he made the team and he wasn't playing any good. He is playing well now, Ian Poulter. So for me, he's a pick. Sergio Garcia. Would you leave Sergio Garcia out?
Possibly.
Possibly. Would you? No, but would you?
Yes, I would.
On a wider note. Would you pick Russell Knox?
No. On a wider note.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. You can't just say who you're going
to
pick right now.
On a wider note.
Is this shaping up to be Bjorn Ericsson in the team?
Yes, I'd have him. Is this shaping up to be one of the strongest European teams?
Yeah, it's a very strong European team. It's a very strong United States team.
But when your rookies are John Rahm and Tommy Fleetwood, I mean, this is different to what it was a few years ago, isn't it?
These are duck to water, these two players. I mean, if John Rahm and Tommy Fleetwood, The Ryder Cup's not going to be a problem for them, I promise you. The golf course is going to be spectacular. And it's like this. The Europeans, in the 3 days, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, of the Ryder Cup could win. If you played it the next 3 days, the Americans could win. It's that close.
On to other news next, and on the European Challenge Tour, Oliver Wilson won the Swedish Challenge hosted by Robert Karlsson. The Englishman beat Joachim B. Hansen of Denmark after a playoff. Great to see Ollie back in the winner's enclosure.
The enigma that is Ollie Wilson. Ollie Wilson probably finished second 8, 9, 10 times on the European Tour without the win. And then he had zero form coming into the Dunhill Links a couple of years ago, and he wins that. And then, with all the exemptions and everything else, I don't know what he did after that. All he had to do was, I know he was working with Robert Rock at the time, whatever they were doing together, it was working. I just think, carry on doing that and re-establish yourself on tour. Then he kind of got lost in the wilderness again, and now he's come back and won on a challenge tour. So maybe this is the start of a real quantifiable comeback for Ollie Wilson, because he can certainly play the game.
26th in the Challenge Tour rankings. He's only played 7 events. You're not going to get into too many European Tour events unless he gets a little bit higher on those rankings.
Listen, he's obviously playing well. There's time enough for Oliver Wilson to put in a big finish on the Challenge Tour. But that's going to give him a lot of confidence. He's been a really good player for a long time. Just got made golf far too complicated. Go on, Ollie.
On the Stayshore Tour, Philip Golding won the Stayshore PJ Seniors Championship at the London Club. The Englishman's 18 under par total was 2 better than Magnus P. Atlevi of Sweden, with the Order of Merit leader Paul Broadhurst one of those who finished tied third. England's Georgia Hall claimed her first major title with a 2-shot victory at the Ricoh Women's British Open at Royal Lytham and St Anne's. The 22-year-old is only the 3rd British winner since the event became a major championship back in 2001. Trailing Pornanong Patlam by a shot overnight, Hall moved clear of the tie with 2 holes remaining and held her nerve to secure victory. Hall finished on 17 under, having picked up 5 shots on the final day. I sensed there was quite a bit of pressure on Georgia Hall. She started strongly, but she handled it brilliantly because there was a big focus on her this week.
Do you know, Royal Lytham St Anne's is a terribly difficult golf course. And you know, if you start spraying it a little bit, if you're nervous and you start spraying it and finding those fairway bunkers, it's all over. So for her to manage her game like she did, Georgia Hall, I was delighted for her. I think she's sort of been under the radar a little bit. You know, everyone has talked about Charlie Hull and maybe Georgia Hall hasn't had the podium as much. But she has now. I mean, to win that major championship and beat all the players that week in, week out tend to feature in the majors. Fantastic win for her, and who knows where this is going to lead. I really, really like watching her play.
But a rules news next, and the RNA and the USGA are proposing regulations regarding the use of green reading materials, reaffirming the need for a player to read greens based on their own judgment, skill and ability. Following a 6-week period of feedback and consultation, the regulations will be finalised in a published interpretation of Rule 4.3, use of equipment, and adopted on the 1st of January 2019. Tell us what this is all about, Rob.
Well, they have green, much like everything else, people find a way to create something that players feel they need. And so these companies made green books, which is an intricate big picture of a green with tiny little arrows showing you that over there, well, it's going to go that way, and over there on that side, the arrows point the other way.
How long have these been around?
Oh, quite some time now, but I mean, they've been around a few years. The ones I looked at most recently, they are very, very detailed. They must take a lot of working out. I don't know what algorithms or what method they use for reading the greens, but anyway, you end up with a map. It's a sort of idiot's guide to green reading, basically. So you work out where the pin is, and then you can see what the slope is doing, and A, it takes longer because you see players and caddies staring at the green book on the green. It makes the game slower. And B, it takes what should be an essential part of the game, which is your skill at seeing what you see and adjusting what you do according to your green reading ability. That is a skill that's part of the game of golf that has been taken away by the intricacies and the detail in these green books. Hooray, hurrah, well played, the RNA.
Who's going to benefit? Who's not going to benefit? Do you think, are there certain players that rely on these books too much, or do they all use them?
They don't all use them. They don't at all. But you can watch any telecast anywhere, a golf tournament on the European Tour or the PGA Tour, and see that the book comes out the back pocket on the green. That is a green book. That isn't how far I just hit my wedge. That is the map of the green. So take that away and make the game be a little more instinctive and a little bit more what it's supposed to be. It is essentially a game of skill, and reading a green is part of that skill set.
Well, on to the USPGA Championship this week at Belle Reve Country Club in St. Louis, Missouri, the fourth and final major of 2018. It's the first time the USPGA has been at Belle Reve since 1992, when Nick Price won by 3 shots from a group of players, including Nick Faldo. Justin Thomas, of course, won last year at Quail Hollow, and prep for his title defence has included a round at Belle Reve a few months ago.
It's a great driving course, you know, a lot of kind of long dog legs that you have to kind of drive it and fit it in here, and it's not like everyone's playing to the same spot. You know, you can take some bunkers on. It's going to be a good challenge. I mean, the rough was up in May. I'm sure it's going to be healthy. You know, it's going to be very, very hot and humid. I don't know what the weather's been like there. I'm sure they've gotten quite a bit of rain. But, you know, in terms of the scores, I really don't know what it's going to be like. But in terms of a golf course, it's going to be a lot different than Quail, because I think Quail is very unique in its own and very difficult.
Bob, what is the setup going to be like at Belle Reve this week?
Well, the major concern over the last 3 or 4 weeks was the condition of the greens. I mean, they basically shut the greens down about 4 weeks ago to the members. They've been playing temporary greens, but Kerry Haig and his staff, Kerry's the gentleman responsible for setting course conditions and whatnot. The last report I got just a couple of days ago, the greens have responded nicely, and they should be in pristine condition coming into the weekend. It is going to be hot. It is going to be humid here. But of course, coming from Charlotte, it probably will not be too much different than it was a year ago. A Parkline golf course. Reese Jones has been working hard. The architect, his father, designed this golf course. I think the PGA of America made a very wise decision in celebrating their 100th anniversary on Belle Reve. I think it's going to provide a real thorough examination.
Camille Villegas won the 2008 tournament that was held there, the BMW Championship. What are you expecting in terms of the course this week, Rob?
It's got a creek that runs through it. 9 holes are affected by the creek and water. It's going to be about driving. There's quite a lot of right-to-left bias holes, so if you see a draw shape as a normal fit for you, it might favour somebody that hits the ball that way. Dustin Johnson fades it, but at some point he's going to win the Masters, so it doesn't always work out. But I do think I'm looking forward to it. It was born in 1960. It hosted a US Open in 65, and then the USPGA Championship that you mentioned. So this is the third major championship that this golf course, and its new guys since 2006, is taken on board. So yeah, I'm looking forward to. It'll be a hot, steamy week in St. Louis, no question about that.
Gary Player won back in 1965. The cream has risen to the top in recent USPGA Championships. Bob, there was a period a good few years ago where you got some huge outsiders win this event, but generally should be looking towards the top of those world rankings for the players that are going to contend, Bob.
Yeah, very well said. I can't see anybody coming outside the top 10 in the world rankings walking away with the title this week. You know, it's one thing to be in the top 10, but when you're all playing well like they were last week, they're going to be tough to beat. This is going to identify the real quality in the field. And like I say, I can't see anybody outside the top 10 coming away with a victory.
Well, one of those players who is in the top 10, of course, is Rory McIlroy, who is optimistic about his chances this week, though he doesn't have prior knowledge of the course.
Well, I contemplated, because I was in Florida last week, I contemplated going over to Belle Reve for a day and checking it out. But I sort of thought to myself, I've never done it before for a PGA, and I've won it a couple of times, and I've played well there, so why would I change what I've always done? I don't think a lot of guys know a lot about it. You know, I've always felt less pressure at the PGA because it's a golf tournament that I've always felt comfortable at. I don't feel like I don't need to change my game. I don't need to try and manufacture different shots. I can go with what I have and know if I do that well, I'm going to have a good chance. I've always felt like it's my most comfortable major, and I think the results back that up.
Is he just saying that, or is it because he's won it twice? Is it because it's the last one of the year and he's faltered in others?
I think you can... You can look
You've
back.
You've got to talk a good game, haven't you?
You have. You've got to absolutely talk it up. And Rory's won 4 majors and 2 of them are PGA championships. We know he's waiting for the Masters for the career Grand Slam. I think of all the 4 majors, the PGA championship, generally speaking, gives you a chance. The US Open tries to kill you. you never know what you're going to get at the Open with the weather conditions. We know the US Masters is all about the greens. The USPGA gives you a chance to shoot some good numbers, and I think that's what Rory likes. I don't think Rory likes attritional golf where you're defending, back-footing, straight batting all the way, you know, for 72 holes. He likes to tee it high, let it fly and go and see how low he can go. That's the way Rory plays. That's why he likes it.
Bob, we've not mentioned Jordan Spieth so far on the podcast. What are your thoughts on his current issues and will he contend this week?
Well, it's amazing when we look at Jordan Spieth. A couple of years ago, everybody in the world, especially fellow media members, were trying to convince me that his putting was the result of his mind, that he had the strongest mind ever to play the game. And 20, 25-foot putts were finding the bottom of the cup with amazing regularity. Suddenly, he's become human. And now 5-foot putts are somewhat difficult. He's certainly not coming in with good form. We went through the disappointment of Rory McIlroy not getting that career Grand Slam at Augusta, Phil Mickelson not getting it at Shinnecock. Jordan Spieth is going to provide us another opportunity to complete a Grand Slam here by winning the PGA Championship. But right now, with the way he's putting, he really is up against it.
Given the fact that he's won majors, obviously, and he's looking for that career Grand Slam, Rob, would it be completely wrong of me to say he's a bit of a bottle merchant, Jordan Spieth, because he gets into position so often in major championships? He should have won 10.
Oh, I don't think you can say that. I know, I don't think you can say either of those two things. Either A, that he's a bottle merchant. I mean, the way he won the Open Championship a year ago was, I don't think there's another player that could have come back from what he did off that 13th tee, where he sprayed his tee shot and dropped it in amongst the trucks and then dropped it out of there and then somehow made a five. And then, I think, played the next five holes in five under.
But for everyone,
I don't think there's anybody in the world that could have come back
he's thrown three away.
But that's the nature of golf, isn't it? You know, Jack Nicklaus won 18 majors and he finished second 19 times. Well, did he bottle it 19 times?
No, that's,
don't be stupid, Roebuck.
That's a fair split. Isn't it? That's a fair split. I'm saying Jordan Spieth, Bobby, gets into these positions all the time, doesn't complete the job. I mean, the Open Championship, the Masters from
you can't win every time you're in contention. That's impossible.
Let's get Bob's take on Jordan's mentality, Bob.
Well, one thing about the Open victory by Jordan Spieth and heroics that he did manufacture on that back nine on Sunday, a big assist in that victory has to go to Matt Kuchar. I can't envision anybody else waiting on that green for Jordan Spieth to finally execute. Not that he did anything wrong, but he certainly took all the time in the world to formulate a game plan. And then he gets to the green and his fellow competitor, Matt Kuchar, greets him with a smile. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I'll personally guarantee you that if it was Colin Montgomery that had to be waiting on that green for Jordan Spieth to arrive, a greeting would not have been a smile.
Yeah, but would Jordan still have gone on to win it?
I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that he would have. I think he would have been a little more concerned with his fellow competitor. He did not have those concerns because of the reputation of Matt Kuchar.
I don't believe that's true at all.
We need some thoughts on some of the Europeans. We can get Bob's view as well. Francesco Molinari, a bit of a dip after the Open last week, as you would expect. Will this course set up properly and well for him, Rob? What do you think on Francesco's chances?
Yeah, you've got to think any time that you need to drive it well, you include Francesco Molinari, because what he's done, especially with his performance on the final day at the Open Championship, is add a putting round to his ball striking round. You put those two things together, like you're seeing with Dustin Johnson. The ball striking is a given. Does he putt well? Then he putts well, he wins. And we've seen from Francesco with his peerless performances on the PGA Tour this year and the win at the Open, he is amongst the very best.
Bob, how impressed have you been with Tommy Fleetwood over the course of the last 18 months? Is it his time this week?
Well, it could very well be his time, and thoroughly impressed with not only the way he plays, but the way he conducts himself. He was a rock star out at Shinnecock at the U.S. Open that final Sunday when he was tearing it up. The crowds were way behind him. He's got so much talent that, Thomas Bjorn is licking his chops to get him to tee off in the Sunday singles when we get to Paris for that Ryder Cup. Tommy Fleetwood, very impressed with, and I think he's got a tremendous upside.
And could Tiger Woods be the winner at Bellerive? The 14-time major winner has been talking about his form and fitness.
I went from just hoping to be able to play the tour to now that I feel like I can play the tour, and I certainly can win again. I've had an opportunity to win a couple times this year. This summer, even excluding the U.S. Open, I feel like I'm starting to hit the ball a little bit better, a little more crisp. And, you know, since I've switched putters, I've started to make some putts. And as we all know, you make a couple putts here and there, it changes everything. The physical health allows me to do the things that I can do. The thing that I've really enjoyed is being able to actually practice my putting again. And there was a period of time where I really couldn't putt because that's what hurt the most. Bending over like that. And, you know, I've been able to, even, you know, when I struggled there for about a month or two, well, about a month and a half with my putting, I've been able to do the legwork to get myself out of it, which, you know, for a number of years there, that wasn't the case. I couldn't do it.
He's still working tremendously hard, isn't he, Bob, to try and get back to where he was. Whether he's going to get back there is debatable. We talked about the fact that this could be his week, and is he going to win again? You reckon he might be a little bit further away. What do you think are his aspirations between now and the end of the season, Bob?
Well, when you start listening to Tiger Woods closely, you almost can detect that the person that he's trying to convince that he can win is himself. He's saying all the right things, which is step one. You have to say them. Robert Lee alluded to that earlier in the show. If you don't believe it yourself, it's certainly not going to manifest itself on the golf course. Tiger Woods, hey, it's a crossroad. I mean, this is the fourth major this year. It's a long time till April and the next major. And just the last couple of days, watching Tiger walk, he wasn't as quick to pick up his tee, wasn't as quick to leave the tee. I don't know if fatigue is setting in, but, you know, this card hole. Hard facts, 42 years old, a broken body at best, but with amazing talent. So you see who wins out. Age, does that dominate and he doesn't win? Or does that talent shine through at least one more time? Maybe it'll be this week.
Bob, big question for you. Do you pick Tiger for your U.S. Ryder Cup side?
It's a lock. He's already probably... I'm going to make this announcement. I guarantee you he's already been fitted for his uniform.
So he's in a lock.
He's in. He's that was a TV mandated pick. There was never any question that it was going to happen. It's a tough spot for Jim Furyk, because if he does pick Tiger and Tiger doesn't perform and the U.S. loses, good golly, then we have some real serious conversation about, you know, the true meaning of the Ryder Cup. Now, on the flip side, if he picks Tiger and Tiger wins the singles match on Sunday and that gives a U.S. victory, Jim Furyk's a genius.
Okay, I'm going to say this. A year ago, this time sort of 12 months ago, I would have said there is no chance of Tiger Woods ever winning a tournament again. And now, 12 months later, I'm saying there is no chance that he will not win a tournament again. It's a guarantee he's going to win again.
That's a pretty strong statement, yeah, Robert Lee.
I've watched him play. I have watched him play. It's only a matter of time for him. If he stays fit, he's going to win again.
Can we put a time scale on this then? What, next year, within the next 12 months?
Yes, absolutely.
So you'll say he's definitely going to win within the next
absolutely.
Year?
Absolutely.
Okay. Interesting. One play that we haven't mentioned when it comes to this week is Justin Rose, pulled out last week with a bad back. Was that precautionary, Rob? Do we know the story behind Justin's withdrawal?
Well, you know, these players, their bodies go through a lot of twisting and turning, and sometimes you get a little niggle, and he thinks, well, would I like to play and push it this week at the WGC, the last time at Firestone, or do I want to kind of go easy on it and get myself right, if it's doable, for the last major of the year? The second option is the one to take.
If I gave you a fiver, would you put it on Justin Thomas or Justin Rose to finish the best of the pair?
Well, you've got to know that Justin's playing, first of all.
Let's say he's playing.
I would think, for me, it's a coin toss.
Bob?
Well, Robert Lee wasn't completely truthful in his answer there. If you gave him a fiver to bet on either one of those, he'd put that fiver in his pocket and smile at you. But I would go with Justin Rose. I really would. I think he was wise in taking the week off. He is so good when he's good. You know, he can win Belle Reve, you know, real quick like.
One final line ahead of the USPGA. American Troy Merritt had emergency surgery on a foot-long blood clot in his arm on Friday, but still hopes to play at Belle Reve. The world number 173 said his arm swelled to twice its normal size and turned purple. Surgeons removed the clot, which went from his left bicep through his armpit and into his left pectoral muscle.
He just won.
Yeah, exactly.
He just won the tour, and then he gets that.
Exactly. He won the Barbasol Championship on the PGA Tour. That was just a couple of weeks ago. He said that the swelling in his arm had been around for a month. He added that he would massage it, grit his teeth, and try and get through it. He said he didn't know it was a blood clot. It was a tough decision when you don't have the job security. It could hit a golf ball, so he kept playing. But this last week, it swelled up so much that there was no way that I could have played.
My goodness.
Really.
Well, thank goodness
he's got to it. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. God bless him.
Yeah, let's hope that Troy Merritt is fit and well, and we see him on the fairways this week. We will obviously see a winner. We need some predictions from you guys. One European Ooh. And one international, so that could be American if that's your persuasion. Bob, we need two off the tee. You can go first.
Well, I'm going to pick Ricky Fowler to win. His first major, he's been lurking long enough. I think he's reached a level of maturity that he can get the job done. I like the fact that this golf course, you have to hit it right to left. Ricky Fowler does that very, very well. You know, if I'm going to go with an international player, I like Justin Rose. I like the fact that he took the week off. Let's go with Rose as my international player pick.
Okay, Fowler and Rose for Bob. Rob?
When we picked our major winners in January, the first show of the year, we went through all four majors. And I haven't got one yet.
Really?
I had Rory at the Masters. That didn't work out.
It's good form, though. You're the same as last year.
Well, it's very difficult to pick one on the specific week. And I had Ricky Fowler to win the Open, Justin Rose to win the US Open. Didn't work out. And I had Justin Thomas to defend this week. So I'm
sticking with JT.
Of course I am. And and my homegrown champion elect is a former winner of the said championship, Rory McIlroy.
Okay. You're not taking too much of a chance.
Why should I? Why should I?
Well, just because.
What, do you want me to lump in someone at 150 to one shot?
Well, why not?
But I'm not going to.
Okay, fair enough. So Rory McIlroy.
I thought the idea was you say who you think's going to win.
Okay.
Right, so I've done that. Thank you.
I'm going to go for Bryson DeChambeau as my American.
Interesting. Bad start last week. Three very good rounds after that.
Yes, exactly. And I know it went a bit pear-shaped in Germany for him, and I know there's a lot talked about what happened late on, but I think that Bryson could be the man.
Bryson, I'm a big fan of Bryson DeChambeau. I'm a big fan of the guys that are prepared to do it a little bit differently. He's certainly one of those. Yeah, I'm really interested watching him play.
Bob, are you a Bryson DeChambeau fan?
Absolutely. He won the U.S. Amateur. He won the NCAA singles. He's extremely talented, and he certainly marches to the beat of a different drummer, but he's good for the game. That's a heck of a pick because he certainly could get the job done.
I'm going to go for Tommy Fleetwood to break his maiden
major duck.
Get his maiden major. Maiden major?
Yeah.
Generally. So Tommy Fleetwood for me.
He looks good to me, Tommy Fleetwood.
Do you know
Fleetwood.
What? It's just the one round, isn't it, in the majors. It's usually a Saturday, unfortunately, that he tends to throw in a bad one.
Do you know what people... And Tommy will tell you this. Before the good run started, before he won the race to Dubai... I played in the British Par 3 Championship up in the Midlands, which I'm actually playing this week, funnily enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'll tell you more about that later.
Absolutely.
So we play a practice round, Jamie Spence, myself, and Tommy Fleetwood. Mm-hmm. And he'd just gone back to Alan, his coach, his old coach, and going back to drawing the ball and doing what was a natural fit for him. And we played nine holes around there for money, obviously. And I unfortunately lipped out the extra hole and lost £20 to Tommy Fleetwood. And that little piece of impetus, that was enough. That was enough to just...
That was the start, wasn't
it? To set the cart on the downhill track to glory. That was the push that Tommy Fleetwood needed. And he will take back his success and the way he's playing now.
He will
all the way
back
to that little, sort of, probably an hour and 15 minutes to play those nine holes around there. He'll take it all. You ask Tommy Fleetwood next time. What was the catalyst? What was the thing that made you change what you're doing to make you become the player that you are? He will take you back to that 20 notes that I handed over.
Bob, we're going to let you go before we do. Many thanks for joining us, obviously. But what do you think is going to be the takeaway at the end of the USPGA Championship? Who's going to be making the headlines? What do you want to see happen over the course of the 4 days?
All I'm hoping for is an opportunity to see Tommy Fleetwood, verify that story that was just spun by Robert Lee, and my next opportunity to spend time with you, I will give you a full report.
Excellent, Bob, excellent.
Tremendous, Bob. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week in St. Louis. We'll see you soon.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Bob.
Now, an event that Bob will certainly enjoy this week is the European Golf Team Championships at Glen Eagles. After the success of the European Tour's Golf Sixes, this is another mixed field event with male and female players teeing it up together at Glen Eagles. It is the inaugural running of the European Golf Team Championships. The action starts on Wednesday, and it's part of the Multisport European Championships, which is being co-hosted by Glasgow and Berlin, and it also features athletics, aquatic sports, cycling, gymnastics, rowing, and triathlon. Rob.
So yeah, it's equal amounts of men and women playing in this tournament, and 16 teams of two players compete in the men's and the women's team event before combining to form teams of four. That's two men and two women in the mixed team championship, which is going to be pretty interesting. That's going to be in foursomes. Equal prize money as well. It's men and women's team match play. 18-hole foursome stroke play mixed team championship. So much to look forward to, really.
I'll tell you what, you are massively across this, obviously. Georgia Hall is teeing up as well, so if anyone wants to go down there and see a major champion, they have got their opportunity.
That's great, isn't it? And you know, she'll look forward to playing that big time. Anytime players get to represent their nations in a competitive scene like this, and being part of the European Championships, I think it's going to be great. So it's a chance for the big stars that are playing at the PGA Championship, leaving spaces for others to come and prosper. And that's what's going to happen.
Any other familiar names in the lineup?
Pedro Oriol and Scott Fernandez are making their way on the European Tour. Two young Spaniards, very good players. And I reckon that puts them, I reckon they're one of the favourites. Lee Slattery's playing with Callum Shinquin for Great Britain 1. Great Britain have three teams in it. Connor Simon, Liam Johnston, and Rhys Enoch and Charlie Ford.
Who's Georgia Hall playing with, Rob?
Georgia Hall, funnily enough, is playing with Laura Davis. Dame Laura Davis and Georgia Hall. And Dame Laura Davis was up at the Ladies British Open or the Ladies Open Championship. So the two of them together should be a strong pairing. Katrina Matthew with Holly Clyburn as well, representing Great Britain 2. And Great Britain 3, Megan McLaren and Michelle Thompson.
And you can keep up to date with that event on europeantour.com. Well, that's all for now. Next week, we'll review the final major of the year, the USPGA Championship at Bellerive, and we'll look back on the European Golf Team Championships. Plus, we'll be looking ahead to the Nordea Masters in Sweden on the European Tour. Until then, you can stay up to date with all the latest news on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat via europeantour.com or by downloading the official app. But for now, from Robert Lee,
who's gone for Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas at the USPGA Championship, the final major of the year.
Rob taking no chances whatsoever.
That's
for me,
right.
It's DeChambeau and Fleetwood. Have a really good week. We'll speak again soon.